You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Friday, June 18th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the podcast so you get this mother clucker once it goes live. We will talk to Chris Thurston. He's a buddy of mine out here in Boston. He's a pretty good bettor, and he loves to attack these NHL series prices in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, Chris, he liked the Lightning last round against the Hurricanes, and that came home. He was also pretty bullish on the Lightning against the Islanders. He bet them game one, but then bet them even bigger after they lost game one. Because guess what happened? The series price became a lot more advantageous. He's got the Lightning at minus 125 or minus 130 to win the series. And now that price is minus 500. So I think the bookmakers continue to spit out numbers and calculations, and they're not paying enough attention to what goes on the ice. So we'll talk about series prices with Chris. Also, betting elite teams before a season. This was something that could have made you good money if you did it in college basketball last year with Baylor and Gonzaga. Chris is a big Baylor guy. And also, envelope excuses. Do you know what an envelope excuse is? If you ever bet with a bookie, you probably do. We'll get into all that later on the show. Before we get to the rundown, I have to bring up this game that happened last night in Major League Baseball. Oh, Nick Bogdanovich, longtime Las Vegas bookmaker, he famously has said, to bet on baseball every day, you need a glass of whiskey and a revolver. And that is so true when you talk about the result of this game between the Reds and the Pirates. This is Thursday night. The total, 7.5 runs. It's nothing going into the bottom of the sixth inning. You had the under. You're feeling great. Fernando Tatis Jr. solo shot. Bottom six, 1-0. Bottom seven, Manny Machado, Yabo, 2-0. No runs in the eighth. So after eight, it is 2-0 Padres. If you have the under 7.5, we're talking about a 98-99% chance of victory. Only one thing can happen. It happened. Top of the ninth, the Reds get four. They haven't scored all game. They get four. Bottom of the ninth, Eric Hosmer hits a two-run homer. Come on. 4-4 and the over, 7.5. Boom, just like that. Victor Caratini also homered bottom of the ninth to walk it off, 6-4. They had two runs after eight innings. And the final score, 10. That's about as bad as it gets in baseball. And imagine having that Padre run line bet when you're laying a run and a half. Sheesh. You're up 2-0 going into the top of the ninth. You're looking pretty good. Then you give up four. Then you're dead. You're a winner, then you're dead as fuck. And then the Padres get four in the bottom of the ninth. 6-4, you cover the run line. That's an amazing turn of events. Just an awful beat if you had the under. I did a show with Steve Buchanan and Julian Edlow on DraftKings the other day, and they do this segment called Know You're Better. And they asked about, you know, your favorite wins and your favorite cashes. And my favorite cash to this day is the Ohio State National Championship team with Cardale Jones. I didn't know Cardale Jones. I didn't even know who he was, let alone know that he was going to take them through Alabama and through Oregon to win the title. But it was a position back in the day when Braxton Miller got hurt at quarterback. Ohio State ballooned up to 25-1. And we put some good coin on it, because we heard JT Barrett was just as good, if not better. Well, Barrett went down in November, late November, I think, and in comes 12-gauge, and they win the whole thing. So we cashed that ticket 25-1. Then they asked about the worst beat, and I always have two. If it's future-wise, it's Gonzaga. When we had Gonzaga 70-1 to win the national championship in 2016-17 season, and Gonzaga was in the title game with a two-point lead, I think with a minute 40 to go over North Carolina. Now, we hedged and took some Carolina money line, but when you bet $100 at 70-1, that's what you're rooting for, not for the hedge. But I think more than any specific beat, as far as a single event goes, I've had multiple beats when you're under 7.5 and it's 1-0 after 8, and then you get, you know, 3 runs in the top of the 9th, 2 in the bottom of the 9th, it's 3-3, and then somebody walks it off with a 2-run dong in the bottom of the 15th or something. And it's like, yeah, you just lost 5-3. Those are the worst losses. Overtime, extra innings, that stuff sucks. Obviously, that's where the under goes to die. But this one didn't even go to extras. That's brutal. We're running it back. I don't care. Trae Young, let's go. I'm on this Trae Young train. We've been doing it all series. We're going points over, threes over, leading scorer. Plus 250, DraftKings had. Tweeted that out at Chicken X Dinner. I was surprised because FanDuel took that off the board for game number 5. They didn't have the top scorer, leading scorer market. DraftKings didn't really have it either. I think they popped it up late. PointsBet had it, but the odds weren't great. DraftKings, in a must-win game for the Sixers, they've got Joel Embiid at, I think, minus 130 to win that bet tonight, to be the leading scorer. I don't know. That guy just, he gasses himself out in the first half, and he's spent by the fourth quarter. DraftKings has Embiid minus 135, Young plus 250. You know my deal with Trae Young. It's about opportunity because the guy takes shots and he gets a lot of them. And the other thing, he's been getting to the free throw line quite a bit. The three-point number makes me a little nervous. Last game, he was 2 of 6. He missed 2 wide open shots from 3, including one at the end of the third quarter that would have put the point total over and the 3 over. He was on 26 and 2 made 3s, and he put up a 3 at the buzzer end of the third, would have put him at 29 and 3 3s. He missed it. He ends up scoring 39. It was easy for the points, but only 2 of 6 at the 3-point line, 17 of 19 at the free throw line. I don't think he's going to get to the line that much tonight, but I think he's going to take more 3s. He took 11 the game before that. He took 11 in the first game. He took 7 in game 2. I think we're going to see more three-point shooting from Trae Young tonight. And this guy just, he takes shots. 23 last game, 26 the game before that, 17 in game 3, 16 in game 2, 23 in game 1. Well, his shoulder might not be 100%. I don't care. He still shot. What'd he shoot? 44% from the floor? You have to do it. And if it ain't broke, I ain't going to fix it. So the juice is a little bit higher, but not much. We're not laying big juice. It's minus 115 to go over 27.5. Minus 125 to go over 2.5 threes. And as I mentioned, leading scorer plus 250. I also like the Hawks plus 3. I don't trust Philly. No shot. They become easier to guard when the game tightens up. It's not even about them blowing big leads. It's about the way they play in the fourth. And Atlanta has shifted all of their attention to Embiid. They're going to double Embiid and front the post, and they don't even, like, they don't even go near Ben Simmons. Go ahead, dude. You want to shoot it, go for it. He's scared. He's not shooting. So you're playing 5-on-4, and Embiid, yeah, he played great in the first quarter, had great numbers in the first half, but he's out of gas with 6 minutes to go, and he's not getting the lift on his jump shots. Trae Young gets better in the third and fourth quarter, and he takes more shots and makes more shots. So, look, you might say, oh, all he does is pick Trae Young anymore. I don't care. He's made us money this round, and I'm going back to that well. 4 plays, 1 on the Hawks, 3 on Trae Young. I'm going to ride it until the series is over, which I think could be tonight. The unders are 5-1 in the Nets-Bucks series. And John Ewing from BetMGM reported that the under has hit by 27 points per game. I love that I talked about that before the series started on this show and did nothing with it. Remember that game one total? It opened at 239.5 points. The total for game seven opened at 214. We have seen a 25-point adjustment to the under. You don't see that in the NBA playoffs. You're lucky if it moves 6-7 points. Maybe you get lucky and it gets 10. 25 points? And these games have been just, you know, brick fights. I can't believe, though, that I didn't. And I talked about it. I'm like, look, that number is way too high. Especially with the way that Milwaukee tightens up. Brooklyn's not really playing all that well. I don't know. I don't know why I didn't do it. But how about that 5-1 of the under? And now it's like, well, do you like the under in game seven? Kind of, but I hate the fact that it's moved already 25 points from game one. So I don't love it. I'll probably be on the Nets tomorrow. Actually, as I look at the screen here, I haven't really looked at it in the last 45 minutes or so, but Milwaukee opened as a 1.5-point favorite. This morning, it was pick everywhere. Now it's Brooklyn -1 pretty much everywhere. So there you go. Money moving toward the Brooklyn Nets. And I don't think Chris Middleton is going to score 40 on the road in Game 7. I was waiting for it last night. I was waiting for Giannis and Coach Bud to turn into pumpkins, which is what they do and what I think they're going to do in Game 7. Chris Middleton won that game for them in Game 6. You going to bet on Chris Middleton to do that again in Game 7? Until I see it from Giannis, no way. And Bud continues to not make adjustments. If not for Middleton, Brooklyn puts them out last night. And I thought it was coming too because the Nets cut the lead down to 5 with about, 7 minutes to go in the fourth. And then Milwaukee ripped off a 14-0 run. Give them credit. They've done their job. Now it's game 7. I lean to the Nets. I'll probably be on the Nets. But that under train, 5-1 in 6 games. When did everybody become a soccer expert all of a sudden? People are just firing wagers on the European Championship. I hear the kids are calling it the Euro. All over Twitter yesterday, people that I know don't know soccer are tweeting out soccer picks. I'm going to stay in my lane. I got enough to worry about. I got enough to do. I'm not going to start throwing out soccer plays. But I had so many people. Oh, Belgium. Belgium's a lock. Belgium money line. Belgium -0.5 goal. Denmark scored in like the first 4 minutes. It's 1-0 Denmark, and everybody got real quiet. Belgium did win 2-1, but they were outshot 21-6. Nice handicap. You're a winner, but okay. If I were to tell you that you were going to be outshot 21-6, would you make that bet? No. Just be careful with the soccer stuff. If you know somebody that watches soccer and handicaps soccer, good for you. But I think this is a big problem for a lot of people that don't pay attention and they just look at the board. And they're like, well, I'm going to parlay this favorite and that favorite, and I'm going to lay the half a goal. And you're yelling at players you don't know and names you can't pronounce, and you don't know who the coach is. You don't know the style of the play. You're just gambling. What does Kevin Spacey say at 21? You weren't counting. You were gambling. Are you really betting with an edge in soccer? If you are, do your thing. I got DMs. Hey, who do you like in the Euro? I have no idea. And I'm not going to act like I do. It's hard enough for me to beat everything else. But, well, I don't beat everything else, especially this year in baseball. Baseball's been a nightmare. But I'm not going to bet soccer. I will never pretend like I know soccer. I did have to in Vegas when I worked at VSiN. I had to host the World Cup show. That was a treat. I, counting high school and college, I never studied that hard. until I got to VSiN and had to study all the teams in the World Cup. That was the year Croatia went on a run, 2018. But I'm not going to act like I know soccer. The ticket and money count for the U.S. Open, I have the numbers from the Westgate Superbook. Jeff Sherman tweeted these out. At the end of the day, going into the tournament, Phil Mickelson was the leading ticket guy at the Westgate, tied with Xander Schauffele. So of all the tickets in the pool to win the U.S. Open, Mickelson and Schauffele had the most. Rahm third, Reed four, Morikawa five. And the money, the most money, there's a difference, as you know, between tickets and money. Rahm one, Schauffele two, Koepka three, Mickelson four, Morikawa five. Lefty stunk yesterday. Four over par. And I hope he stinks again today, and I hope he misses the cut. I don't want to get back into it from the show the other day, but the shift in the market made no sense. Forget that he was 300-1 to win the PGA Championship, and he was 80-1 or 60-1 to win this event, U.S. Open. He went from a minus 200 favorite to miss the cut to a minus 130 favorite to make the cut. None of that makes sense. We shorted. I hope you did too. If he plays okay on Friday, I still love it. If you would have told me Mickelson would be four over day one, yep, sounds about right. But he was number one in tickets. And not just at the Westgate. A couple other books had him up there too. He was really high at the South Point. He was high at the Golden Nugget. People love to bet on what they've last seen. And the last thing they saw in a golf major was Mickelson winning. There was a six-hour Massachusetts sports betting hearing yesterday, and it was virtual, which allowed them to bring in some heavy hitters. They had executives from every league, it felt like. They had people from the NFL, the NBA, the NHL. They had casino executives. They had all kinds of people talking about sports betting. And Rich Gotham, who's the owner of the Boston Celtics, he said in all his years, the one complaint he has never gotten has been a sports betting complaint. Players shaving points, guys taking dives. Not once has he heard anything or been privy to anything about sports betting. Sam Kennedy from the Red Sox is on this call. There was a lot of positivity yesterday. And I thought this quote from Senator Paul Feeney was great because you have to hit the people with the numbers. Feeney said, quote, one of our chief exports in the entire state of Massachusetts is gaming revenue to Rhode Island and New Hampshire. You let that one simmer. Look at all this money that's leaving our state and going elsewhere. This is the same thing that happened in Illinois. Illinois was late to the party, relatively speaking, in the Midwest. And they were getting squeezed because Iowa was live, Indiana was live. So Chicago, obviously, is the mecca in Illinois. It's the mecca of the Midwest. People had to drive out of Chicago and across the state border to make a bet. And we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars every month in handle. Not in hold, not in money taken in by the state, but people were betting hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they weren't doing it in Illinois. So Illinois figured it out. They got together. They said, look, we are bleeding money. This money could be ours, and it's not. And you look at the handle numbers, April 2021, Illinois was the number two state in handle. Only state with more handle, New Jersey. So Massachusetts and the lawmakers that are trying to get this thing through are explaining to the people that don't get it, hey, look at all this money. Some states have already taken $1 billion in handle in 2021. And the ticky-tack stuff with the Massachusetts, like some people don't want mobile, others want brick and mortar only, some want kiosks. It's like, look, let's just figure it out. And they had 19 bills that were heard yesterday. That's too many. I'm skeptical that they can figure out one bill. But you can start a new bill or a new package and jam it into another bill. That happened in Illinois. They didn't pass the sports betting bill. They jammed the sports betting thing into the vertical capital bill, Senate Bill 660. It wasn't a standalone sports betting bill. It got pushed into something else and then pushed through, and then everybody signed it. I don't know that they can whittle down 19 into 1. I'd make that the underdog. But it looks like, and I was following Robert Linehan, who did a great job covering this all day for Elite Sports New York. And he wrote, the lead in his column is, the debate on Massachusetts sports betting is back in a big way. And he thinks that they're bringing it back into the light. People keep asking me at work, too, well, what's the timeline? When's it going to happen? I don't know. In a perfect world, they're ready by the 1st of September, and they're taking bets for the NFL. But I'd make that the underdog. I think by Super Bowl is cool, but even then, look, just get it done. Forget about what you've lost already in the last year, year and a half, 2 years or whatever, and just figure out a way to bring in money. We're talking about paying for roads and fixing up schools and all that. Like, that money goes to the state. And it's money that you don't even have to do anything for because people are already gambling. There are so many bookies in Boston. I think the bookies will still be fine too because a lot of people like to bet with credit. But you're talking about, I would say in Massachusetts, the state would make, you know, $6-7 million on average per month. Multiply that by 12. That's a lot of money. And a lot of that money is already leaving anyways to go to New Hampshire and Rhode Island. Connecticut's going to be up and running by football. Eventually, New York's going to have mobile. It's almost like every state that touches Massachusetts has figured it out. And Massachusetts hasn't. So we'll see what happens. One last thing before we get to Chris Thurston. And I saw this last night, late last night. Nice news dump at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. VSiN has temporarily suspended morning host Pauly Howard. 2 minutes after VSiN put out their tweet, Pauly Howard tweeted, quote, I respect and support the decision made by VSiN regarding my temporary suspension. I heard about this. I refuse to discuss it on this show. It's not my business. It could have been, but it's not. I've heard a lot. In fact, I sent some warning shots out to a couple people at VSiN and said, hey, I got a couple calls on something. You may want to listen to this. And the response was, I can't comment on the situation. So clearly, everybody there knows what's going on. You're going to learn a lot more about this in the coming weeks. But VSiN has said, look, it's a temporary suspension. So it is what it is. I'm not going to comment one way or the other on what happened or what I think of what they did. I just think it's interesting that, you know, they suspend Pauly Howard, but they haven't suspended other hosts for other shady shit. It is what it is. You're going to read more. You're going to hear more. Pauly, I guess, hasn't been on the air for about 3 weeks now. And that suspension, I don't know how much longer it is. I don't really know. Look, VSiN and I, we went our separate ways. There's a lot that should be said but won't. There's no point. It's not my business. I am not into breaking news. I am not into diving inside people's personal lives. I like Pauly. I never had an issue with Pauly Howard. But this is something that a couple days ago, it was very clear something was going on, and I got a couple calls about it. And when you go to people that are close to VSiN, it's like, hey, you should know about this. I'm not trying to report on anything. I'm just trying to say, hey, like, this is a thing. Like, I've seen some stuff and heard some stuff, and the comments were, I can't talk about this. So that's what I know. That may not be what you want to hear. You want me to probably burn the world? Look, I'm staying out of this one. But things will come to the surface sooner rather than later. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, you can hear him Wednesday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Diehards Radio, on Sports Map Radio. He is the biggest and loudest Baylor fan I know. His name is Chris Thurston. He's on Twitter at CTBets16. I watched the game when Baylor actually lost to Kansas with you. They didn't lose a lot this last year. You are not fun to watch a Baylor game with when they don't win.
Oh, man. Sammy, you sound like my wife. She says the same exact thing. No, I am not fun to watch a Baylor game with when they're having a tough go. But luckily, that was only one of the few losses they had on the year, and it was a good way to end the year, obviously.
Somebody said, is he just that big of a Baylor fan, or does he have money on him? I said, probably both, but no, he rocks the Baylor hat everywhere he goes. You got the Baylor hat on. Actually, you don't have the Baylor hat on in the profile pic. You've got the old school Patriots logo, but you rock hard with Baylor. I know you went there, but like, you love that team, football, basketball. You really do.
So I didn't go. I played college hockey at St. Michael's College undergrad, and then went to Baylor post grad just for a year. But I'll tell you, I know you and I have talked about it, but it was probably the best year of my life, going to those games and being in Texas. It was surreal. And them winning the national championship this year, obviously, I had a couple slices of pie on them to win it all from the beginning of the year. So it was a good way to close out. That I'm going to miss that team. Jared Butler, Mitchell, those guys, they should pay Mark Few, that poor man. I mean, all the teams that he's had and just can't finish the job. But I was happy to see Scott Drew get his first national championship at Baylor, and hopefully more good things to come.
All that being said about Baylor, you do bring up an interesting angle that I've had for the last couple of years on Gonzaga. And I did, a couple buddies and I had Gonzaga 70-1 the year they went to the title and played North Carolina. They were up
to
like a minute 40 to go. Gonzaga's got the lead. Before that season, they were 70-1. If you would have just bet a unit on Gonzaga every offseason going into the next season, you would have had such a good opportunity to hedge or get creative down the road, because they're so loaded. They get great players and they don't fucking play anybody, dude, until the tournament. So odds are good that even if you take them right now, like DraftKings 7-1, whatever the odds are, if you take them right now, odds are good that they're going to be like 3-1 to win the title by the time you get to the tournament.
Absolutely. Great point. And probably going to be a one seed too. So, and Timmy just said he's coming back. Obviously they have Mark Few, who he's in the dance every single year. That conference is trash. They win it. No problem. Hands down. But yeah, you make a great point. If you could get an 8-9-1 right now, yeah, I don't mind that one bit.
When you're in the middle of the storm, it's always harder than when you're outside the storm. But there have been times in that West Coast Conference tournament when they're playing St. Mary's, and I'm like, oh, I got to take the 19. And they're down 20 at half. You know, we talk ourselves into something, and we think, wow, that number's way too big. But with elite teams, sometimes it's almost like you should lay it before take it.
I agree, and you just reminded me of probably about when I was in my early 20s and didn't really know anything about gambling, but thought I knew everything about gambling. And it would be the last Saturday night basketball game to go. Gonzaga's playing Pepperdine, 11:30 Eastern. And you'd look at it and you'd be drinking beers all day. And you'd say, oh, Pepperdine getting 26 points? Like, kidding me? No problem. They'll hang with Gonzaga. And then by halftime, they're down by 40. And you're like, what did I just do?
Oh, the worst. Yeah, the midnight special. And that also applied in college football when Hawaii was Hawaii. You know, they had Timmy Chang, Colt Brennan, rest in peace. I don't know how many times I'm forearm up on the bar, 11:30 at night, and somebody leans to me and goes, I love Hawaii in the first half. And then I send the text, take the dog in the first half.
I'm right there with you. I think I was in my mother's basement one time during a Hawaii late night special, and Timmy Chang threw an interception. I threw my mom's treadmill on the ground, and all kinds of noise going on in the house. My dad came flying down, wanted to know what happened, and I told him that Timmy Chang, that fuck, just threw a pick, and he just shook his head and went back to bed.
I'm surprised you didn't just say the treadmill fell on its own.
I probably should have, to be honest with you.
I used to, you know, run some numbers for some guys back in the day. You know, you're 18, 19, 20. You're out of high school. You're in college. People need you to pick up an envelope for somebody. And it's like, yeah, you know, I'll do it. Why not? The excuses I used to get. Oh, my God. My girlfriend got into a car accident. She's not going to make it. You know, like, oh, I'm out of the country right now. I'm like, how does he have money to go out of the country when he's always short on the stack? Oh, my dog got ran over by an 18-wheeler. You know, like some of these excuses are just, they're bananas. I'm sure you've got buddies that have heard stories.
So I'm right there with you. I have a couple good buddies that kind of do the same thing and take some action. And the stories they tell me are unbelievable. Actually, a few weeks ago, he called me up, because I always tell him, I'm like, you got to keep me posted on, because he tells me all the guys' names and, you know, what they do and their excuses. And one of these guys, a couple weeks ago, says that he was in this terrible car accident, and the dog was in the vet. They're in the hospital. He can't pay the bills. He needs a couple weeks, right? So the kid's like, all right, yeah, I'll work with you. No problem. Just stay in contact with me. And a couple weeks go by, doesn't hear anything, hits him up again, and finally gets him on the phone. And the kid says, oh, yeah, well, I was in Aruba on vacation, and the reason why I can't send money to you is I left my debit card in Aruba.
Come on.
And my buddy's like, hold on, a couple of weeks ago, you were telling me that you were in the hospital and, you know, you got banged up in this car accident, and now you're on vacation in Aruba and you can't pay me the $1,000 that you owe me. What's going on here? And it's just the same old song time after time. And I know what another one, a good one is, Sammy. So my buddy tells me, you know, text with these guys, and he says, all right, you know, here's your figure from last week. You know, shoot it over whenever you get a chance. And so the person has time to respond. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm just jammed up at work right now. I'll send it at the end of the day. And my buddy's like, he has time to shoot me a text message saying I'm jammed up at work. I'll shoot it at the end of the day. It takes 2 seconds to go into a PayPal or a Venmo and fire it over. It's just excuse after excuse. Everybody is the busiest person in the world. You know that.
I've had runners that I know back in Chicago. Think about their week, right? They've got to usually pick up on Monday or Tuesday. This is back in the day. This is years ago. But they used to pick up on Monday and Tuesday so that they could pay out on Thursday and Friday, because that's the way it works, and more people lose. So they take in X, and then they distribute Y, and it's same old song and dance. You'd have people like, you know, all right, I'm going to meet you at the McDonald's here. And the runner would be like, okay, I'll see you at 11. And at 1 o'clock, he's still trying to find the guy who said he was going to be somewhere at 11. And then at 1, this guy is so freaking mad because he's gone way across the world to get to this McDonald's. And now the person's not answering the phone. The people that lose, they have no, I don't want to say, it's not credibility, because they don't have credibility. They have no compassion for the art of this, and they throw the whole week off. And if this runner's got to meet 50 or 60 guys and 10 of them flake, they're going to go nuts.
Absolutely. And that's a great way to put it. You know, that's a tough business to be in, because you're counting on the losing money coming in to pay out the winners. Because there are, as you know, there are some people out there that win. There's not many, and it's very hard to do, but there are winners, and that throws the whole week off. You know, my buddy always says, he says it best. He says, Chris, you talk to these guys, and they all have 3 houses. They all have 3 cars. They all have a lot of cash, and they go out to dinner here and there, and they talk such a big game, right? And they're quote-unquote professional gamblers, and this is what they do for a living. And then they go out and they blow out an account for $5,000, and they're like, my dog died. I got a vet bill. I've even heard people blame deaths, fake deaths in the family, and the person's still alive. It's every single week. They can't come up with the money somehow, but they talk the biggest game in the world. It's sad, to be honest with you.
And then when they go up, that 1 week when they go up, they shoot you the text on Sunday night like, hey, when can I meet?
Knocking on the door. They want to get paid Sunday night before they even go to bed. Want to know when the meetup date is. But then when they lose, they're absolutely nowhere to be found.
Mm, what a life. I don't play much golf, you know, and I definitely don't give out golf on Chicken Dinner, because I think – it takes a special creature to really focus entirely on golf. Like, the people I know that make a lot of money in golf, They bet golf and like nothing else. For me to pay attention to college basketball, college football, NFL, NHL, MLB, I have to pick my spots. I wrote about this on Nesson. Lefty missing the cut. He shot 4 over on Thursday. I'm happy about that. I think he's going to bomb out today. But for some reason, I don't know why, you and I are texting on Wednesday night, and I'm like, dude, I love Koepka for no reason. I feel like it's a play. And you go, oh, I already bombed him. So then I bought a little piece here. And look, it feels good for the first time in a while to have a golf inclination and to have the guy actually in the running after day one. Long way to go, but we came to a decision together late Wednesday night. Hey, psst, Koepka.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty happy when you sent me over that text. I'm like you. I very rarely get involved in golf. Is it fun to do in the major championships? Yes. I have a couple of friends. Actually, you and I have a good mutual friend, that good golf handicapper. And he only focuses in on golf and NASCAR and guys like that. They make some money doing that. I was with you. There's no particular reason why I liked Koepka. Everybody was kind of saying DeChambeau and Bryson, the defending champ. Obviously, I thought he looked meh. I mean, at best in the PGA, just hasn't been playing great. Brooks obviously going for, he's won he didn't play last year, I believe, but he's won 2 out of 3 before that. And the one that he lost to Gary Woodland by 3 strokes. This guy loves the Open. He's made it very clear that all he cares about is major championships and winning majors, and he's done a pretty good job at it. And you're right. To have we got a nice little number. I had it in at 17, plus 1,700 when you hit me. We were able to get down at plus 1,650. So it's nice seeing Brooks go out, shoot 2 under yesterday, be on the leaderboard. And I got to tell you, when the other 155 golfers are looking up at that leaderboard today at Torrey Pines, they're not going to be they're shaking seeing Brooks Koepka name, that's for sure.
Because he's done it before, he's won it before, you're right. So let me ask you this, because I know there are a lot of people that are probably listening to this like, wow, thanks for the tip, guys. Well, look.
Right.
Most times I give out a golf dart, it's going to lose, number one. Number two, you can still sort of, for the people that have Koepka, and I'm sure a lot of people have Koepka because Koepka's a popular guy to bet on. I just pulled up the live list at, say, PointsBet. John Rahm is 550, Koepka's 7-1, so we got a good number there. But is there anybody in that field that you might actually hit? Oosthuizen 8-1, Xander's 8-1, Rory's 14, Matsuyama's 16. Knowing that you have a good number on Koepka and he's probably going to be in the hunt through the weekend, how do you allocate your money elsewhere now, if you even do?
So, great question. I love our number, and I actually kind of as a small hedge. Obviously, you're right. It's tough to hit a golfer winning a tournament, right? So we kind of took a shot, hoping Brooks is going to be in it. I also bet Brooks Koepka in a tournament matchup, minus 115 over Jordan Spieth. I'm a big Jordan Spieth fan, but he's been playing some better golf lately, but he just can't string it together. He's in his own head constantly, and I thought Koepka minus 115 over Spieth was great value, and obviously we saw yesterday Spieth blew up. I think he's 6 over, and so hopefully – Brooks is obviously 8 shots ahead of him. Hopefully look to cash that ticket today. But to answer your question, I probably won't do anything more today. Okay. I'll see how today shakes out. Xander Schauffele, though, he's one to look out for. He's playing great golf. A lot of sharp golf handicappers told me, keep an eye out for Schauffele. I'm going to see how it goes today and kind of regroup and take a look at what the odds are tomorrow to win it. But we're in pretty good shape right now with the team ticket we got.
You had the Lightning in game one, and this is part of the way it works with the series prices. Now, I know you were bullish on them in the last round against Carolina. You liked them in this round. You liked them in game one. But I think there's one thing that you do well it's sort of sticking to your guns, right? Okay, Tampa loses the first game. They're down 1-0. You think, you know what? I'm going to hit the series price now. And this is something that I've talked about on this show all NHL postseason. I don't think the books know how to move these series prices accordingly. I think it's all math to them and no substance. They don't pay attention to style. Most of them, they don't pay attention to the way the games are played. They're putting in numbers into a calculator and spitting out a price. What did you get the Lightning at after game one? Minus a quarter or something like that to win the series?
So after game one, I got it at minus 115 to win the series when they went down 1-0.
And now it's minus 500.
Yeah, back up over minus 500. So one of what I've been doing, I think I told you this a couple weeks ago, and obviously I'm no genius. It's been working for me a little bit in the NHL this playoff. So I like Tampa this series, right? So the series price was minus 260, minus 270. So I like them to win the series. So then you go and look at game number one, and game one is minus 190 Lightning. So I'm saying to myself, all right, I like the Lightning to win this series. If they're going to win the, you know, I mean, game one is minus 190. So let me hit game one, minus 190, not have to lay 260. I put a couple shekels on that. If they lose, which they end up losing, I could get a better series price, which I did. I hit the minus 115. And if they win, great. I just stacked up some cash, and I could see how the rest of the series goes and pick my spots where there's good value betting the Lightning. Instead of laying the minus 260, you lay the minus 190. It didn't work out game one, but then I get the Lightning minus 115, and I bet them the last two games, and now they're up 2-1, and you see where the series price is now. And that happened a couple times. Actually, you and I both liked the Avalanche in the last series, yeah. Right? And they were, unfortunately, almost a 2-1 favorite. And game one was Avs minus 180. So I liked them on the series. So I said, let me hit the Avs game one and then see what happens. I hit the Avs game one. They end up winning. And then, obviously, I tried to pick my spots here and there. And it obviously didn't work out great because Vegas ended up turning it on somehow and smoking them 4-2. But it's been an interesting theory to follow. Instead of laying the big price on the series, bet game one and then take it from there.
If you like the dog, though, it gets even more complex because now you're fading everybody else. And I took some flack, you know, before game one of the Vegas-Montreal series. I talked about hitting the Canadiens at plus 425 to win the series. And at plus, I don't know, 230 or something to win game one. You get the DMs like, oh, good call on the Habs. They lost one game. They win game two. Have you seen the way the series prices move? Vegas went from minus 500 to minus 1,100 after they won one fucking hockey game. They went to minus 1,100. Montreal wins game two.
That's fucking insane.
Now Vegas is minus 330, minus 340.
Wow. Yeah. I did not see that after game one that it went as high as 1,100. But it's like, it's crazy because all these people. Now, granted, I do like Vegas to win the series.
Sure.
I did not bet that because I thought that's insane to lay that. And you got a nice price there at plus 425. Yeah. That's a great price, and they have the hottest goalie in the NHL right now with Carey Price. But to move that after one game to minus 1,100, that's absolute insanity. And now it's 1-1. You're going back to Montreal. No American NHL team has traveled to Canada at all this year. This will be the first time that an American team goes to Canada. I don't know what they're doing for crowd. I know there's going to be some fans.
It's
I don't think
3,000 people.
Close.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. Yeah. Obviously, it's not going to be like when you're watching the Vegas game.
But that's a good point about travel, though. That's a good point about travel. All I've heard about is the no fans, but I haven't thought about Vegas having to get on a plane and fly all the way to Montreal.
Right, and then think of this too, Sammy. So I don't know what it's going to be like, but I have a buddy that lives in Canada and in Toronto, and he says they're still on lockdown. I mean, they go to work and then home. That's it. So now these Vegas players have to go travel to Canada, right? Now, what's the rules going to be like for them? They're used to living normal day lives, going out to eat, seeing their families. Now I think it's going to be to the rink. You have pregame skate, back to the hotel. I think you have to be isolated in your room, and then it's on the bus again back to the rink. So who knows how Vegas is going to adapt to that. I think slight edge to the Habs right now going into tonight.
One final question for you. Let's go to Game 7 in the NBA. I think essentially we're handicapping now just how slow James Harden is and how effective he can be, because if he plays like he does in Game 6, I would imagine the supporting cast for Brooklyn is better at home. Most supporting casts are. This thing opened Bucks -1.5 in Brooklyn, Game 7. Now the market is pick everywhere. Do you have a thought on Game 7 Saturday night, Bucks and the Nets?
So I'm not a big NBA guy. I kind of rely on others that I surround myself within the gambling world to pick these games, but I gotta go with the Nets. I feel like it's just, this is, you know, they put this team together. Harden has never, you know, been able to put it together and win an NBA championship. I think Durant goes off on Saturday night at home, like he did the other night, carries the load, and I do think the Nets are going to get it done. I think all around they're a better team. Giannis is obviously going to be there, but let's see what he does. But I kind of like the Nets at a pick right now at home to get it done and advance and go to the Eastern Conference Finals.
He is Chris Thurston at CTBets16. You can hear him Wednesday nights on Diehards Radio, on SportsMap Radio. And he's one of the best balkers I've ever met. No man can sound like a chicken more than this guy. I appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate all the support. And I guess there's just one last thing to do. Bark!
Thanks for having me, Sammy. Bark!
Bark! That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Chris Thurston for hopping on the show. And I got those Habs. Don't have them in Game 3, but it'd be nice if they can win Game 3, because then that plus 425 or plus 400, whatever you got, then that price is all of a sudden a whole lot shorter. I was looking at the consensus series number for Vegas and Montreal, and the average number right now, Golden Knights minus 340. So the Canadians come back at about plus 270. That's really interesting because it's already moved. It's wild how these move. Vegas goes from minus 5 to minus 11 to minus 340. And who knows what that number does after Game 3. I would argue, and what I would think, hey, you might be able to take Vegas. If Vegas loses Game 3, they might be like minus 130 to win the series. And then you have a situation where you can keep that Habs ticket 4-1 in your back pocket and maybe bite a little piece of that off with Vegas at minus 130. You got options here, and that's all you want. We got Trae Young, over points, over threes, leading scorer, and the Hawks plus the three. Cash some tickets, make some money. We will talk to Jason Mizrahi next Tuesday. He is with Win Daily Sports, and he is one of the best daily fantasy brains in the world. We will talk to you next week right here on Chicken Dinner. So you